Exes, you've got a serious tax problem. So get serious. Call Nationwide Tax Relief. We're honest, and we'll treat you like family. Call us for your free, confidential consultation. Again, you're not alone. You've got Nationwide.
Call Nationwide Tax Relief today at 1-800-958-2677. That's 1-800-958-2677.
This is the GCN Radio Network.
Dr. Stan here at the Genesis Communication Network, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for the survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guest. And, well, this afternoon we're hoping against hope that we're going to have with us Joel Skousen, and we're going to be talking about what's going on in the world today. And we hear all sorts of conflicting information. Now suddenly there's going to be a conference held somewhere in Iraq, and they're going to invite in Iraq's neighbors, including Iran and Syria, and the Americans are going to talk to them. But we're really not going to talk to them, because we won't talk to them unless, of course, they agree to give up their development of nuclear weapons. But Iran says they're not developing nuclear weapons. They're just trying to be able to enrich uranium so that they'll be able to have nuclear energy, which, of course, the United States encouraged them to begin to develop back in 1976, giving them the plans for the power plant and for enriching uranium at the time. So, but then, of course, the Russians have offered to provide enriched uranium for the power plant, and then Iranians won't accept that. They say they want to be able to do it on their own, which would suggest they really want to develop the nuclear weapons. And then, of course, we find them. President Ahmadinejad, who, as you know, was actually selected from Central Casting for his part, and he's playing it very well, threatening Israel, threatening the United States, threatening Europe. Why would he be doing that sort of thing with two carrier task force sitting there in the Persian Gulf and another couple coming in a month or so? And, of course, if things got hot, why, we would just leave the four carrier task force in place, one of the most awesome accumulations of military power ever accumulated at any time in the history of the world. And you have to understand that America spends more money for its military than all the rest of the nations in the entire world. We are the most powerful nation in the world. Why would President Ahmadinejad be making such ridiculous statements and risking even the vague possibility his remarks would be used to justify a war, a nuclear or a conventional strike on Iran that would kill hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of their people? Why would anybody in their right mind make such a statement unless this is what it was really all about, and he's simply playing a part? And there is a cosmic script that is drawing us into a third world war, a war with the Muslim world. And, of course, we repeatedly say, you know, we're not against the Muslims, we're just against Islamofascism. And yet, if you read the writings of Muhammad certainly advocated jihad against the West, and that the Muslims would one day rule the world. But then the Christians believe the same thing. We believe that Christ is going to come and we're going to rule the world, and the Muslims believe that the Mahdi, the Imam Mahdi, figure that is going to return. He suddenly disappeared somewhere in the 9th century, but he's going to come back and he's going to rule the world and bring all people under the control of Sharia law and of Islam. Now, if you look at what's going on from a purely logical point of view, nothing makes sense. However, if you read the occult literature as we do, and we have the advantage of reading that, for instance, you read Share magazine, which is published by Benjamin Krem, who is the disciple of the master, a disciple of the Master. And he says that the, it says there, and for the, this is entirely new because I've been reading this for, oh, probably 15 years. The Master is coming, and he's coming very, very soon. They've never said that before. They've always said he was there, he was waiting for the right time. But they tell us that now is the right time for him to come. So what did they know? What are they planning? Remember, behind everything going on today are powerful spiritual forces. We'll be back in just a moment here at Genesis.
We understand that decisions related to health can be overwhelming. That is why at ResearchedHerbs.com we take pride in offering you herbs whose safety and effectiveness have been proven time and time again. For example, did you know that Live 52, the top-selling natural herbal supplement for liver diseases since 1930, is backed by over 300 research studies and clinical trials and prescribed by more than 200,000 health professionals worldwide? In fact, the effectiveness of all the herbs featured on ResearchedHerbs.com, including those for cholesterol, blood pressure, diabetes, arthritis, cirrhosis, and hepatitis, among others, is extremely well documented. Our website, ResearchedHerbs.com, was created to empower you with the information and answers you need to make the right health decisions. Researched and proven herbs at great prices. Visit us online at ResearchedHerbs.com or call 1-800-845-3841 for more information. That's 1-800-845-3841.
More than 700 chemicals have been found in our drinking water. And did you know that you can have greater exposure to these chemicals by taking hot showers than when you drink the water? That's because many chemicals are inhaled when they evaporate, and others are absorbed through the skin. The KDF shower filter is designed to reduce chlorine, lead, mercury, and iron, and it inhibits the growth of bacteria, mold, algae, and fungus in your shower. The media is non-toxic, environmentally sound, and is recyclable. The KDF shower filter will typically last 10,000 gallons or 1 year, whichever comes first. Hospitals, restaurants, and water treatment facilities use this media to reduce chlorine, iron, heavy metals, and bacteria. What about you? Order your KDF shower filter, normally $49, for our special price of only $35, a $14 savings. Call now to order at 1-888-803-4438. Order today and save $14 by calling 1-888-803-4438.
Hello, friends. Alex Jones here with an important question. When was the last time you used pure soap? I mean, real hard-to-find, all-natural pure soap that contains no dyes, perfumes, deodorants, detergents, or other dangerous toxins. The Calbin Pure Soap Company, for the past 57 years, has been making triple-concentrated pure soaps exclusively for healthcare professionals and hospitals. Now, for the first time, Calbin Pure Soap is available factory-direct to you and your family. That's great news because Calbin Pure Soap is made from all-natural ingredients, is earth-friendly, and completely environmentally safe. So if you want yesterday's values today for good old-fashioned pure soap, call 1-800-340-7091. Save up to 85% off supermarket and retail store prices. Call today for a Calbin soap catalog at 1-800-340-7091. That's 1-800-340-7091 or on the web at calbinpuresoap.com. Try pure soap once and I'll guarantee you'll never use anything else.
Well, Dr. Stan here at the Genesis Communication Network, and our special guest this afternoon is Joel Skousen, certainly one of my favorite guests, and I'm sure yours as well. He's, of course, from World Affairs Brief, and he's going to bring us up to date on what's really going on in the world. Hi, Joel. How are you doing?
I'm just fine, Dr. Stan. It's good to be with you, as usual.
Well, tell us what your take is on what's unfolding.
Well, there seems to be a concerted effort by the administration in the Middle East to scapegoat various governments for what they are doing in terms of actual provocations of the war on terror. The insurgency in the war on terror, as I've documented many times in the World Affairs Brief, is mostly a product of, in fact, agent provocateurs going in and attacking Sunnis, blaming it on Shiites, and attacking Shiites and blaming it on Sunnis, and blaming it, when there's lack of another scapegoat, on Al-Qaeda. The latest scapegoating is Cheney's sudden trip to Pakistan. You know, never before have we had a vice president who has been allowed to have such a strong secret mission in foreign policy. There's, you know, the joke vice president of Dan Quayle, who was put in as Bush's vice president, who did nothing, who's done there specifically to placate, the conservative right, but wasn't allowed to do anything at all. Hillary Clinton kind of acted like a vice president, but generally a vice president is nothing in the administration. This president, this vice president, who I believe is the real handler of President Bush, jet sets around the world to troubleshoot and take care of secret missions. He had that secret mission to Saudi Arabia. It's never told exactly why he's there. He had the secret mission to Pakistan. And there's plenty of superficial reasons that the administration always gives out to the spokesmen who travel with the vice president on Air Force Two. But it is the concerted opinion of various pundits now that, in essence, Cheney was making it appear as if he was attacking Pakistan for allowing al-Qaeda to continue to have influence in Afghanistan. And this is a cover, essentially, because of the worsening situation in Afghanistan. This spring, as it approaches, is about, in my opinion, to take a new turn for the worst in Pakistan, as the Taliban have been preparing to attack NATO forces in the south. They have their bases in Pakistan. But, of course, you know, there's two sides of this coin. The Pakistan that the United States is attacking is the...
Afghanistan, isn't it?
I'm sorry. Pardon me?
The Taliban in Afghanistan.
Well, what they're attacking Pakistan on is for not supposedly shutting down the...
Right.
Qaeda or the Taliban pipeline coming out of Pakistan.
Right.
But this is done actually through the auspices of the ISI, which is another front for the CIA. They're the ones who essentially built this war on terror and al-Qaeda, including Saudi Arabia, all done under the auspices of the CIA. And so this is like the pot calling the kettle black.
And so basically you've got the Saudis, you've got the Pakistanis, and probably the CIA, I'm sure the CIA, working together to finance both the Taliban and al-Qaeda, the finest enemies that our money can buy.
Yes, of course the New York Times claimed, the Cheney sources told them that Cheney had an unusually tough message for General Pervez Musharraf, warning him that the newly democratic Congress could cut aid to his country unless his forces become more aggressive in hunting down operatives with al-Qaeda. Of course, you'll never see that aid cut because the administration, of course, claims that the Pakistan is an integral partner in the war on terror. But, the ISI, the intelligence service of Pakistan, is the one who is openly sympathetic to the Taliban, and even in establishment circles, they say, to a lesser extent, to Osama bin Laden. But you can't trust any of that. These are secret organizations that are, desperate for to hide their relationships with the U.S.
Agreed, no question at all that this nothing is it as it appears to be, and of course, my concern, and I'm sure yours is as well, is that the war is going to heat up in Afghanistan, and more American forces, both fighting under the American flag and those fighting under the NATO flag, are going to be killed in the process.
Well, just as the United States, when they went in to start this new offensive in Iraq, this new surge, they blamed it on the al-Maliki government for not taking control of or disarming the Shiite militias. Pretty hard to do, of course, when the Shiite militia leaders are part of the government keeping Maliki in power. And so, the al-Maliki government is essentially the U.S. scapegoat. Now, this is a very interesting strategy, because there are two agendas here. One is the agenda to keep the American people pacified. The Bush administration is extremely unpopular. It's much more unpopular even than polls show among thinking people, especially those who are Internet savvy. There is a whopping 80% disapproval rating of those that are active on the Internet of the Bush administration, and just a very small percentage who knows all the facts that it's defensive, or even knows part of the fact that it's defensive of the Bush administration. There's an extreme defense out in the hinterland of people who get their news, quote, conservatives, dumbed down by the news media, who insist the news media or think that the news media is telling them the truth. But we have a phony opposition in Congress. The Democrats are not really going to stop this war. They've talked about having the power. But in essence, we've got a situation here where the United States is continue to give excuses, and there are always plausible excuses for the everything that the administration, or at least plausibly superficial excuses that the administration gives for all of their actions, even when they're betraying the United States or doing treasonous or hypocritical things, such as the interplay between being permissive with North Korea and their nuclear program and being hardline with Iran. They always have superficial explanations to diffuse the charge of hypocrisy. But part of this explanation is that it's Pakistan that is the problem here. They're the ones who are harboring al-Qaeda. And the superficial explanation, of course, is that Pervez Musharraf has to run a delicate balance between those in his country that are pro-Islamic fundamentalism, and that he would lose power. We can't afford to let him lose power by cracking down too hard. And all of this is just so much smoke and cover for the fact that there is a hardcore underground secret relationship between the CIA and the ISI, which is running terrorism. They are controlling a good deal of the actual high-profile terrorism. The only real terrorism is local terrorism in the Middle East, in Israel primarily, where they have real terrorists. And when you have real terrorists, you have infiltrations across the border, even with high security. With our no security on the border, we have no infiltration across the border. So how do we explain that? We certainly can't have it both ways, that the U.S. has a major terrorist problem and yet no small, cheap attacks in the United States like they have anywhere in the world. Now, the other reason that I'm talking about, there is the cover that in Iraq and Pakistan that the U.S. can blame it on other scapegoats for their problems in the Middle East. This is to keep the United States people placated. But at the same time, the Bush administration continues to antagonize the rest of the world by antagonizing Muslims, by antagonizing Sunnis, now by antagonizing even Kurdish people, antagonizing anyone that they can in order to build this momentum for the image that the U.S. is the bully of the world, so that when the real axis of evil, Russia and China, attack the United States, a good portion of the world will say, yes, it's deserved. So I think we have both agendas going on at the very same time here. Unless you have some specific analysis to give you the evidence of this, you'll never get any hint of that in the establishment news media.
Agreed. All right. Well, certainly I'm very, very concerned that Afghanistan is going to be increasingly destabilized, as certainly the Iraq will become increasingly destabilized. In fact, the one of the lead articles in Foreign Affairs, which just arrived, Foreign Affairs, Theoretical Journal of the Council on Foreign Relations, the lead article says, well, there's no way we can win the war in Iraq. Just no way. It's a civil war, no matter what the administration says. And the major force there is Shia killing Sunni and Sunni killing Shia.
And, of course, it isn't true. I mean, it is agent provocateurs killing Sunnis, blaming on the Shiites, and the Shiites retaliate. And then they attack, agent provocateurs attack the Shiites, blame it on the Sunnis, and then the Sunnis retaliate. And so you have this ongoing battle. What's interesting to note is that as the Mehdi army and the other Shiite militias go underground so they don't have to meet this surge, and that's what they've done, and part of that is because al-Maliki wants to make sure that he can't get the blame for the failure of this surge. But even if that has occurred, what has happened is that these huge car bombings have increased, which means the only thing left on the ground are the agent provocateurs. And this is very interesting because it shows that the Sunni Shia violence can in fact be quelled fairly rapidly, even to be in their mutual interest. What can't be quelled is the fact that we have hundreds and hundreds of agent provocateurs in Iraq funneling explosives to the various sides, and even packing cars with explosives and arresting people, telling them to get in this car and drive to a local police station to explain themselves, and this car explodes. These are not suicides. These are people who have been suicided. And that's a real difference.
And I think that the tragic thing is that people don't understand, if we had peace in Iraq, how could we possibly justify staying there? It's really all about justifying American forces staying there. Would you agree?
Yes, but it's interesting. The left takes this as saying we want to stay there in order to control oil. And while controlling oil is definitely one of the globalist objective in this, this is only the secondary objective. And believe me, it's an objective that's really working. The Iraqi ministry is just, or cabinet has just approved this new oil bill passed by, and it's clearly a bill to enhance U.S. Corporations' involvement in oil in Iraq.
But there are other agendas as well, don't you think, besides the oil?
War 3, and that's why what I have explained in my theory.
Right. Hold on. We'll be back in just a moment with Joel Skousen, and I agree. Bye-bye.
Some people believe a group of wealthy men control political parties, the American media, and the wealth of our nation. Is this true? Dr. Stanley Monteith spent 40 years studying secret societies and subversive movements. He lived in Africa for 3 years, and when he returned home, he studied the writings of the men who shaped the modern world. His book, Brotherhood of Darkness, identifies the people who control the world and the organizations they created. Dr. Monteith exposes the movement behind Rhodes scholarships, the origin of the Council on Foreign Relations, and the myths surrounding communism. He discusses the goal of all covert organizations, so if you read Brotherhood of Darkness, you will learn a secret that has been passed down through the centuries. When you learn this secret, you will understand what the future holds and what you must do to help preserve our nation. Call and order your copy. 877-300-7645. Only $12.95. That's 877-300-7695.
Gold, it's like nothing else on Earth. From the Romans through the Renaissance, from the Industrial Age to the Space Age, gold has weathered the test of time. For 6,000 years, gold has remained the ultimate store of wealth. According to the World Gold Council and the U.S. Mint, demand is at an all-time high. The stage is being set for the reemergence of gold as the common-sense alternative to a fiat paper currency that gets weaker every day. Midas Resources is proud to offer the hard-hitting report that arms you with the truth you need to protect you and your family from the Fed's plans for your hard-earned money. Don't gamble with your future. Call Midas Resources today and ask for your free copy of As Good as Gold. Call 1-800-686-2233 for the report the Fed hopes you'll never see. As Good as Gold can be yours by calling 800-686-2237. If you have ever thought about owning gold, you must read this report. Call Midas today at 800-686-2237.
Good morning, honey. Wow, the weather is beautiful, the cabin is terrific, and it's the first day of our vacation.
Yeah.
Honey, is there something wrong?
Yeah, I just realized we forgot to pack the travel Berkey system. I can't drink this cabin water. And what am I going to do when I'm out on the lake? Now the whole vacation is ruined.
Honey, cheer up. I brought our Sport Berkey purifiers.
What?
Yeah, I know you're picky about not having pathogenic bacteria, organic chemicals, heavy metals or foul tastes and odors in the water. So I packed our Sport Berkey purifiers.
You know, this is a terrific cabin. And wow, have you noticed the beautiful weather?
Don't ruin your vacation. Get a travel Berkey today for only $209 or get a Sport Berkey for only $39. Call 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438. Or order on the web at berkeywater.com. Travel Berkey not available in Iowa.
It's a fact. You can legally eliminate credit card debt, which has been fraudulently created by the banks. Since its creation in 1913, the Federal Reserve has not been held responsible for its own debt. So why should you, the hardworking American, be harassed for yours? There's a double standard when it comes to being responsible for debt, and unlike the Federal Reserve, the people of this country can't print more money when needed. Day of Jubilee has created a successful program designed for people that want to stop harassing calls and threatening letters from bill collectors. This is not a debt consolidation company. Join the thousands of Americans who now breathe a sigh of relief because they have legally eliminated their credit card debt instead of living each day in fear. It's time to turn your life around. Call Day of Jubilee, open 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Central Standard Time at 920-293-8024. That's 920-293-8024 and ask for Robert. Don't wait any longer to get your life back in order.
The This is Dr. Stan back here at the Genesis Communication Network, and our guest is Joel Skousen from World Affairs Brief. Joel, go ahead and pick the story up.
Well, there is evidence, according to Seymour Hersh, although he still buys into the Al-Qaeda, you know, terrorism thing, nevertheless, he is bringing up a good point. He says that there is every indication that the United States is now trying to induce the same kind of civil war in Lebanon. You know, right now the Hezbollah has a very dominant position there because of the popularity of having beaten the Israeli army, who made themselves very unpopular by bombing civilian infrastructure in Lebanon. But now it appears that the U.S. is funding Sunni militias there and Sunni insurgents there to begin attacking the Shiite militia, which is under Nasrallah's organization. And so we can expect here within a little while for this to erupt, if Hersh is right, and I have every reason to think that the evidence that he has found out is true. A lot of this is being pumped through Saudi Arabia. And so Saudi Arabia, of course, is Sunni, and so it is the channel for getting these funds to the Sunnis in Lebanon.
Yes, it was a fascinating article in the New Yorker. I'm sure you're referring to the one that you had posted there. I've read it through several times, and he certainly, of course, lays this whole story out, including the fact that we are funding, the very people that are funding Al-Qaeda, which I thought was really so interesting to see him saying, that we are actually funding indirectly and directly Al-Qaeda today.
Right. It's interesting that Hersh, you know, as an establishment journalist, even though he's on the left, does not see the connection that U.S. is running Al-Qaeda, at least from the top, which explains a lot of these anomalies. But anyway, that's at least we've got some information that we can, continue to assess the situation. Another one is the off-the-record transcript of a conference call with John Bolton, former U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, with AIPAC. Now, this is the American Zionist Call Club, part of this huge Israeli lobby here in the United States. And this information comes from the website of Atlas Shrugs, which is a pro-AIPAC right-wing blog, former who basically put this out. He said, "Let me turn to the question of Iran, and I think the situation at home is there. The Security Council just passed a resolution," Bolton said. "The resolution that the Security Council passed at the end of last month imposing certain limits, concerning that they cease their uranium enrichment activities." He also said, "I'd have to say, because I'm a private citizen now and therefore a free man, that these are my personal views. And this sanctions resolution is very disappointing," Bolton said. He says, "It is not as though I would have liked to have seen it. In many respects, the Russians did an outstanding job with their point of view in protecting Iran and narrowing the scope of the sanctions. I think many of the things that we want to try and do to prevent the Iranians from continuing to make progress on the nuclear ballistic missile programs, I think the Iranian reaction to the sanctions resolution is very telling in their respect, although they've passed a resolution in Parliament to reevaluate their relationship with the International Atomic Energy Commission. They have not rejected the sanction resolution. But what the main point I want to make is what he says at the end. He said, they have not done anything more dramatic, such as withdrawing from the Non-Proliferation Treaty or throwing out inspectors of the International Atomic Energy Agency, which I actually hoped they would do, he said. That kind of reaction would produce a counter-reaction that actually would be more beneficial to us. Now, this is Hegelian dialectic in action. He's telling the Israeli lobby here in the United States, I wish the Iranians had done something dramatic which would give us an excuse to paint them worse, and eventually, of course, he isn't saying so, but would have justified the attack on Iran, which is coming.
I agree. I think it's only a matter of time. And I think everything that's going on today is to convince the American people, oh, shucks, we're going to do everything possible to avoid war. We don't want to go to war, but Well, we just can't let those terrible Iranians get the nuclear bomb like Pakistan and India and Russia and China and Israel. They all have the bomb, but we certainly can't get the let the Iranians get it. Why, if they got it, why everybody would want to get it?
Well, indeed, I think part of the big hoopla that's been made this past several days over the United States going to talk to Iran and Syria as part of an Iraqi conference on security of Iraq is just more of a bone thrown to the Democrats and the diplomatic community, which has been calling for direct talks with Iran and Syria. This, of course, has nothing to do with the direct confrontation of the U.S. with Iran and Syria that they have...
Hold that. We're going to have to go to a quick break. We'll be right back.
Order a copy of this show for your friends and family at GCNLive.com or call 877-300-7645.
How are you feeling today? I ask because if you have health challenges, then reading our free booklet about the most amazing discovery of our time is crucial. The booklet is about an amazing fruit from Southeast Asia they call mangosteen. It's a centuries-old medicinal fruit whose time has come, and it has amassed 40 years of published research. We have information and testimonials from all over the world about the health potentials of this amazing fruit. This powerful botanical has contributed to the well-being of millions of people the world over with health concerns just like yours. You can have the 22-page e-booklet absolutely free. We'll also refer you a website with links to actual testimonials and product information. Could this fruit help you in your quest for total health? Find out why mangosteen is known as the queen of all fruits and why it is fast becoming the best-selling wellness product ever brought to the market. Your health is in your hands. Do something about it today. Call 800-681-1909. Again, that's 800-681-1909.
Nuclear reactors provide economical energy, but would you be prepared during an accident? During nuclear disasters, great amounts of radioactive iodine are released into the atmosphere, which are then readily absorbed into the body. Medical Corps' potassium iodate gives you virtually complete protection from the most feared consequence of a nuclear accident, radioactive poisoning. Potassium iodate can protect against radioactive poisoning by filling the thyroid with good iodine. This shields the thyroid and prevents it from absorbing the harmful radioactive iodine. Potassium iodate is better than the iodide form because it is not as likely to cause upset stomachs in children, the elderly, the sick, and pets. Order the official potassium iodate for only $24 and save $5 by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438. Call now and get free shipping. That's 888-803-4438.
Did you ever wonder how an opera singer that hits a high note is able to shatter a wine glass? Well, the glass has a natural resonance. If the resonant frequency force making the glass vibrate is big enough, the size of the vibration will become so large that the glass shatters. Using a similar principle, Royal Raymond Rife discovered that disease organisms can be destroyed using different resonant frequencies. The BioSolutions frequency instrument uses the same technology for relief or elimination of pain and disease conditions with no side effects. The 2006 BioSolutions Plus is the easy to operate frequency instrument ever developed. Its easy reference guide will allow you to begin using the instrument within minutes. Simple step-by-step instructions using pictures are easy to follow. Customer satisfaction is guaranteed or your money back. Don't just treat symptoms, eliminate the cause. For more information, call BioSolutions toll-free 1-866-885-6625. That's 1-866-885-6625. 1-866-885-6625.
Well, Dr. Stan, back here at the Genesis Communication Network, and before we go on, I'd like Joel to tell you how you can get a copy of his World Affairs Brief and tell you about his website, and let me recommend very, very strongly that you take advantage of the information he provides. So, Joel, how can people actually find out about your weekly publication?
Well, the best way is to go to my website, which is www.worldaffairsbrief.com. Not only do you get a rundown of today's news as screened by my staff, they basically pick and choose among the hundreds of stories that come out each day and give you the best so that it's pre-filtered for you. But these are the raw news stories from establishment media generally. At the end of each week, I'll be writing an analysis of those news stories and providing the other insights I have from other sources which aren't public. And that's what's interesting, the type of thing that we're discussing today in this radio program. If any of your listeners would like a free sample copy of the World Affairs Brief, they can send me an email to editor@worldaffairsbrief.com. That's editor@worldaffairsbrief.com. And I'll be happy to send them a sample copy of the World Affairs Brief so they can evaluate it to see if they would like to subscribe. Also on the website, on the right-hand column, are a lot of archival material, which I've covered all the major scandals in government, cover-ups that in synopsis form so that you can get a good picture on how our government operates on what we generally call the dark side, giving us an insight into those that really control our government or the Bush administration. And on the left-hand side, there are a lot of links to some of my books that I've written on how to prepare against what I think is an ultimately a very bad situation where a country will lose its sovereignty under a global new world order. So go to worldaffairsbrief.com and enjoy reading about my view, at least, of how this world works.
All right. And, of course, it's really very, very similar to mine. Now, certainly Joe, before we went to the break, was talking about the fact that the Americans have said, well, you know, we're going to attend this meeting where all the neighbors are going to get together. You know, that's Iran, Iraq, Syria, and Iran, and we're going to talk, but we're really not going to talk because we can't talk because the Iranians won't agree to give up their effort to get, to develop nuclear weapons. Well, basically, of course, Joel thinks this is a lot of smoke and mirrors, rhetoric over reality. It's all to give the impression they're doing something, whereas they really have no intention of accomplishing more or less anything at all. It's all a prelude to of course, the coming attack on Iran. So pick the story up from there, Joel.
Yes, what I'm saying is that the administration refuses to talk or in bilateral talks, meaning face-to-face with Iran or Syria over the issues, unless they completely concede the issue before you talk. And this is interesting. In other words, you concede and give up your nuclear enrichment program or we won't talk. Well, if you give it up, what's the reason for talking? You see why that's a catch-22 situation? What's the reason for talking if you have to give it up as a precondition of the talk? Contrast this with the U.S. changing stance on North Korea. They've agreed now to bilateral face-to-face talks with North Korea. And not only has North Korea not actually decided to give up the nuclear weapons program, that's just simply on the table. So you see the hypocrisy here. And we know that North Korea has many times before signed agreements where they agreed to give up their nuclear weapons in exchange for fuel oil, building nuclear power plants, and extensive food aid, and they cheat on it. And yet we're going to sign the same agreement. We've already initialed an agreement which essentially provides the same thing to them without them ever having to give up anything and to have comprehensive inspections. Now, they will allow some inspections, but you don't find the United States letting Iran get away with that. So my take on this is that the United States is simply playing lip service to diplomacy by appearing to be talking to Iran and Syria at this Iraq conference, when in fact the issue of nuclear enrichment will be off the table. Why they aren't allowed to discuss that, even though they're going to discuss it with North Korea, that's the kind of hypocrisy that the American news media ought to be peppering Tony Snow, the White House spokesman, about. Well, and not taking no for an answer if he refuses to talk about it.
Well, because, you know, the amazing thing is that the United States has been looking for an excuse to continue to subsidize the North Korean government and keep this ruthless government in power. They did this certainly under the Clinton administration, and then, of course, supposedly we stopped doing it somewhere about 2002 or so when we found out that they were cheating. We always knew they were cheating, but then we allowed the South Koreans and the Chinese to subsidize the North Korea. But now we're going to go back to subsidizing North Korea. But we can't tell the American people that. We got to make these concessions so they'll stop the manufacturing the nuclear weapons that threaten America. And it's certainly the ultimate in hypocrisy.
Indeed, it is. This administration, I'm just wondering how the reaction is going to come out when, after so many vehement denials that the U.S. is intending to attack Iran. I mean, even the White House spokesman said that any in responding to another Seymour Hersh article in the New Yorker about U.S. plans to attack and how they have a 24-hour plan now, and he says, you know, all of this is just so much disinformation, disingenuous, and not helpful to the situation. You know, these people are just outright lying. And when it actually, when the attack comes, will the press, in fact, you know, hold these people to the fire for these lies? I doubt if they will, and I doubt if the Congress will. You know, there are superficial reasons for them to deny that they knew. A spokesman would say, well, you know, when I asked people in the administration if they were planning an attack, they told me no, so I had to take them at their face value. Well, somebody's lying, and somebody ought to be held accountable. But I predict that no one, once again, will be held accountable any more than this administration has been held accountable for the lies leading up to the war in Iraq. Now, in like manner, after all of the denials, especially on Fox News about the North American Union being in existence or acting, the administration acting as if it is in existence, after all of these denials by the administration as well as the pundits on Fox News, we find that Condoleezza Rice on February 26 is meeting with her Canadian and Mexican counterparts in Ottawa to discuss plans for a North American Union at a secretive security and prosperity partnership meeting. That's the SPP, the Security Prosperity Partnership that Bush signed and claims is not a treaty, claims there's no obligations, and yet we have all kinds of government officials around meeting, and this is something that's not been passed by Congress. There's no authorization to spend taxpayer monies on these expenses, the salaries of these people involved in these, and they continue to deny that they exist, and yet they are existing. There were two dissenters that got into this week's meeting with Condoleezza Rice, and just like the Bilderbergers, they were caught by the police, ushered out, and removed. So this is very interesting that they are intending on forcing this upon the American people without a vote, it appears.
Well, of course, they know that if they ask the American people, they would say, no, we don't want to give up our sovereignty. We don't want to give up our Constitution. We don't want to give up our freedom. They don't understand. The elite believe they're so much smarter than we are. They have a different agenda. They have an entirely different worldview. And they hate this idea of individual freedom for the peons. That's for certain. And then, of course, once it's in a fait accompli, they'll say, well, we lied, but so what? You know, there's no going back now.
Yeah. And what are you going to do about it?
What are you going to do about it? And is there a process of simply transferring our wealth and our jobs and certainly the future freedom of our children to these other countries, not only to Mexico and Canada, but all throughout the world? The whole idea is to impoverish the American people, and then when they have been impoverished and wondering where their next meal is going to come from, they'll look to their master, to the government, to the elite for help and aid.
That's right. Well, you know, new light continues to be shed on the CIA's black site prisons. And, you know, the government claims now that they don't, without saying so many words, that they've stopped that practice, but there's no evidence that they've given either to reveal what the sites were or whether or not they're empty or to allow inspectors to check to see if they are empty. But in any case, one of the things that's most disturbing is these Operation Falcons that are being run by so-called joint task force between federal and local law enforcement. Essentially, they set down to plan a major sweep of all the petty and low-life criminals that are sitting out there, and they sweep up hundreds at a time and claim that they're doing a great service for taking these people off the street. Now, here's my questions about that in the first place. If you know that you've got hundreds of criminals out there that are in violation of warrants and are in violation of parole and things, why is it that you have to wait for a giant sweep to pick these people up? Even as you are complaining about not having enough jail space, this sounds to me like a guaranteed opportunity to have to release a bunch of prisoners to make room for these ones that you've swept up. But if they are legitimate criminals that need to be swept up, why do they have to wait for a federal sweep? What I'm feeling is that the federal government is coordinating, and either they are taking people who the local governments do not have the absolute evidence on to be able to put into court and sweep them up you know, without proper charges, and we would never know what happens to them because, you know, that once they disappear within the bowels of government, they really don't honor habeas corpus anymore, and they can't hold these people indefinitely. Jose Padilla, an American citizen, been held for 3 years without charge in prison. For 3 years. And these people have been rounded up in Operation Falcon. We don't know because the government refuses to tell us what's happened to these hundreds of people who have been rounded up. Have they been charged or are they simply being held without charge? Now, technically they can't do that within terrorism, but once you get the American people and law enforcement used to the fact that people are being rounded up without charge and kept without charge, and when they ask, well, whatever happened to those people we rounded up, they probably say, it's none of your business. This is a federal issue now. This is very worrisome, Dr. Stan, because the basic question is, these people should all, if it was legitimate, these people should have already been arrested by law enforcement locally without having to wait for a huge federal task force to come in and jointly supervise the mass arrest. There's a great deal of propaganda value in this, and I'm afraid it's more than just chalking up points with the public about being tough on law enforcement.
And, of course, the thing is, are the federal officials interfering or arresting these people for federal crimes? That's one thing, but how many of these are local crimes that, you know, certainly are not a federal issue? And if they're not a federal issue, then why is the federal government involved? And we really don't know, do we?
Well, certainly you can't round up the numbers that they have and have them all being involved in federal crimes. You know, this is basically a show, a piece of massive federal enforcement, and these kinds of sweeps, I believe, are important, Dr. Stan, because in the future, when you want to round up dissidents, when you want to round up, you know, terror suspects, or whatever label you might want to put on them, they have to get local law enforcement used to participating in these kinds of large roundups and not bucking it. The bigger they are, the less the more resistant local officials are to buck the trend.
I share your concern.
On to another subject in Europe. You know, I think the United States keeps talking about rogue missile threats, and that's the reason why they want to build a European missile shield defense from threats from countries it considers rogue states, including North Korea and Iran. But in fact, this is not the real reason the U.S. wants to put a missile defense system into Poland and Czechoslovakia. The real reason, of course, is to be able to hit Russian missiles in their boost phase. Now, this is very interesting because the United States is both at once assuring the Russians that they have no threat, putting up a missile defense system that has no nuclear warheads or even conventional warheads on them, for that matter, making them very ineffective. But in fact, almost provoking the Russians to show their hand about, you know, not wanting any missile defense system anywhere near their borders. Obviously, the Russians know that they're planning a preemptive strike. The U.S. knows that as well. And they don't want any preemptive striking missiles. They suspect probably the U.S. will put warheads on those missiles, even though they don't have them presently.
Or they may have alternative missiles as well. I mean, I believe we probably have some very, very effective laser weapons that nobody ever wants to talk about.
Well, I know there are a lot of high-tech weapons the U.S. is hiding. But, you know, it's very interesting how they cover for Russian war and Chinese war preparations, and yet at the same time they almost instigate them to come out and show that they are you know, very worried about having a missile defense. I mean, obviously, why would the Russians be worried about a missile defense in Czechoslovakia if they aren't intending to strike? Well, they are intending to strike. What's more complex, of course, is that the U.S. intends to allow for a preemptive first strike to launch and land on the U.S. military forces before they even attempt to retaliate when it's too late.
And I think it's so very, very difficult for the average American to believe that our leaders would actually invite a nuclear strike on the United States, and we would have a policy that says we will not retaliate until we've absorbed a first strike. Why would any rational people do such a stupid thing? I mean, that would be because we would lose all of those nuclear weapons that were wiped out with this first strike. And the thing is that it's not that our leaders are not rational. They're very rational. I think that they really want the devastation of so much of our country.
Yes. It's very interesting that one of my subscribers, who's a Christian leader here in the nation, has written a novel based upon the scenario. His name is Franklin Meyer out of Montrose, Colorado, and the book isn't, I'm not sure if it's quite in publication yet, but he's given me a pre-publication copy. It's a very interesting read, and I will certainly alert you if it comes out in print, because it would be very interesting to see how this preemptive nuclear strike would play out and what the what's going to happen to America in the aftermath. It's a fascinating read.
But I think, of course, your point is so well made that the reason that they really want to go into World War III is out of the chaos of World War III will come the demand for the world government. That's what it's really all about. Just as this was the reason for World War I, the League of Nations, World War II, the United Nations, but when that didn't bring about the world government, they decided they would have a third world war, and that's just what they're planning, but they cannot tell the American people.
Yes, as, you know, I often get asked in my general theory, but why would these capitalists, because a lot of people think that this is just for capitalist greed, why would the capitalists invite a nuclear preemptive strike on their own country, on the United States of America, with all the destruction and the inhibition or destruction of the U.S. economy that would occur? It just doesn't make sense for capitalists. But in fact, when you understand that they're globalists and that they intend to make even more money rebuilding the world after this war, but under a different control scenario where only the big corporations will have a say in what this, and they will make themselves wealthy.
Okay.
And it isn't just that. Of course, the real you know, problem is that they want globalism.
Amen. We're out of time. God bless. Thanks very much. Our guest has been Joel Skousen. And World Affairs Brief. Go there, get the information, and I hope you want to take the newsletter. Bye-bye. Talk to you later.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll-free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our Founding Fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Hello, folks. Alex Jones here, introducing Prudent Places USA, an interactive CD book that is your premier resource for hard-to-find information. Find out about everything from job migration to evacuation information, such as major bridges in disrepair and FEMA evacuation time studies for coastal cities. Zero in on man-made disaster zones, environmental areas of concern, and natural disaster zones. Find out everything from where to get water in an emergency to geographic income levels. Housing prices, complete with over 3 gigabytes of detailed information on the 3,000-plus counties in the U.S., full-color photographs, 550 high-resolution full-color maps, and detailed information and analysis that you need. Order Prudent Places USA now for only $29 plus shipping by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438 and tell them Alex Jones sent you. That's 888-803-4438 or order online at BerkeyWater.com.
Shelly, you look oh, wait, why did you turn that down?
I get so tired of that girl's squeaky voice. I'm sure the bed fan works, but that squeaky voice.
Well, what's the bed fan?
It's a fan that helps hot sleepers stay cool at night.
I could use something like that. This menopause thing is really getting to me at night, and you know how I am about doing that hormone therapy thing. Besides, you're a hot sleeper yourself. You're always throwing the covers off in the middle of the night.
I guess you're right. Why don't we try it? Just think how nice it'll be to sleep through the night.
Yeah, and just think how nice it'll be this summer and all the money we can save on air conditioning.
I know where we can get some more information.
Sleep disorder centers across the country recommend that you must stay cool to get a good night's sleep. The Bedfan will keep you cool and give you the restful sleep you deserve. With our 30-day 100% guarantee, you risk nothing. Are you a hot sleeper? Is your partner a hot sleeper? The Bedfan is the answer. Visit us today at www.bedfan.com. That's www.bedfan.com.
That's bedfan.com.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at the Genesis Communication Network, and this is the time I need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and if you agree with our message and you'd like to have it heard all across America on even more stations, and right now we have about almost 60 different outlets. Now, that's satellite, shortwave, internet, and various stations across America. Some of them just half an hour a week, but at least they're hearing the truth that they'll never hear elsewhere, and hopefully then getting onto our internet. Why, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, and for a gift of $20 a month or more, you can join the Radio Liberty family and get our four best tapes or four best CDs of the month, and as well as the monthly letter, and be kept abreast of what's really going on. Or you can subscribe to our newsletter. Whatever you can do, we'll appreciate. If you've not yet read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, shame on you. You can see it for nothing on the internet. Just Google in Brotherhood of Darkness video, and you can pull it up and watch it. And many of the other videos we've actually produced through Radio Liberty are up there. And certainly, if you want to know what their names are, go to our website of RadioLiberty.com. And there you can, of course, listen to our internet programs or pull them down archived or pull them down MP3. But help us get the information out and get other people listening and understand there are powerful spiritual forces at work. Now, if you haven't seen some of our other material, certainly you'll want to, of course, get the new four tapes that we put together by Constance Cumby, who will introduce you, as she did me, to the occult. We carry her book, and we'll be carrying a video. We have the video, and we'll be carrying the DVD of a talk that Constance gave at our last conference. And they're available by calling 1-800-544-8927. We still have copies of her book, The Hidden Dangers of the Rainbow. We have a four-tape set of interviews with Constance Cumby, and we have, of course, either the video or soon the DVD of Constance Cumby's talk. And then, of course, we have the book, The Satanic Crimes. Excellent. We have the four-tape set on the Bohemian Grove or on the Skull and Bone Society. Understand what these organizations are all about. And then, of course, on the other side, if you'd like to perhaps have even more hope and see how our Lord is working in society, we're carrying a new book. It's called 90 Minutes in Heaven. And you can order that along with my interview with the author, Don Piper, as we talk about what happened to the man who actually went to heaven and came back again, and how this experience had transformed his life, and it touched so many other people's lives, because there really is a spiritual battle that's going on between good and evil today. Then we have a four-tape set on the hell, whatever happened to hell, in the book, and of course this tells you the stories of the people who went the other direction when they died. And let me remind you that all of us are going to die one day, and one day you are going to have to stand before the judgment throne and ask where you'll spend eternity. And you better start thinking about that now, because it could happen 120 years from now, or it could happen tomorrow or tonight. And what would you do if you were to stand before the gates of the most holy Father, the most holy God, and be asked, why should you be admitted to heaven? Well, certainly listen to some of our programs. We have a wonderful book we're carrying now. It's called The Hiding Place. It's by Corey Ten Boom. It's the story of her experiences in Nazi Germany and what happened to her when she was in the Nazi concentration camps. How do you handle a hopeless situation? We have a four-tape set on the true story of the Holocaust, and then we have a four-tape set on the other Holocausts that have gone on. Understand we're involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield, and And then please pray for America, pray for revival, pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And we're going to be back here in just a moment with another fascinating program here at Radio Liberty.
Hello, folks. This is Alex Jones introducing you to the...
You're listening to the Global Star Radio Network, located at Telstar 5 KU band, frequency 11836, symbol rate 20770. Thank you for listening.
Stand back here at Radio Liberty, coming here from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, well, this afternoon we're going to have a fascinating interview with Dennis Avery on a book that he has written along with Fred Singer, Dr. Fred Singer, who is certainly one of the world's leading climatologists. And the title of the book is Unstoppable Global Warming. Unstoppable Global Warming. And what is he really talking about? Well, he's talking about the fact that the Earth has gone through periods of global warming repeatedly down to the eons. And, of course, he believes the Earth is much older than I do, but that's all right. It's an excellent book. And he really goes into the fact that certainly we know that Greenland was called Greenland because it was green and lush and they could grow hay and crops and vineyards and greenyard and Greenland 1,000 years ago. And, of course, there were actually many, many outposts there. They were actually moving up on the west coast of Greenland. And then, of course, the world began to cool. And from about 1,000 up till about 1,300, while the cooling was persistent, by 1,400, all the people had actually left Greenland. All the settlers that had come from Iceland and from the Scandinavian countries had been forced out of Greenland because we were moving into an ice age. And then, of course, somewhere between the 1600 and 1800, why the process began to reverse and we began moving into a period of global warming. And so when you're discussing what's going on today, do not deny that there's global warming, because there really is global warming. In fact, during the first part of this 20th century, the last century, we had about 0.4 of a degree of warming of the Earth, and we probably warmed the Earth maybe 0.75 of a degree, or maybe even a full degree in the last couple of 100 years. So there is global warming. The issue is not, is there global warming? The issue is man's activity actually influencing global warming? That is, the increased CO2 in the world actually harmful or is it beneficial? Well, we know, for instance, that the 0.4 of a degree of warming during the 20th century, most of it that took place, almost all of it took place, you know, prior to 1940, and after that we began to get a period of global cooling, and that's when all the liberal pundits were talking about the coming ice age, and you can go back and read the books that were written at that time, lamenting the fact we were moving into a new ice age, and of course many of the people who today we're talking about the threat of global cooling and the destruction of societies. We had a new ice age. Now they're talking about the threat of global warming. And you must understand, as this book makes so very clear, this issue has nothing to do with global warming. It has to do with an attack on industrialized society. It has to do with convincing us we have to conserve energy. It has to do with convincing us we have to do away with conventional light bulbs and have fluorescent light bulbs. To begin cutting back on the uses of energy in our homes and air conditioning and heating, and of course to do away with, of course, industrialized society, and take us back to where we were before the evil white man came to the new world. Understand, we're dealing with people who have a different agenda. This whole scenario of global warming is really all about destroying Western civilization. When you understand that, so much of what's going on really makes sense. If you don't understand that, nothing makes sense. We'll be back in just a moment. Hopefully we'll very soon have Mr. Avery. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. And I guess this afternoon is to be Dennis Avery, and we're going to be talking with him about his new book, Unstoppable Global Warming. In fact, it's such a good book that we've ordered copies, and we will have them available here at Radio Liberty. And it's a book you really need to read and understand that when you were told that there is global warming taking place, and we've got to do something to stop it. Well, the truth of the matter is global warming is taking place, but there is no way in the world we can stop it, because it has to do with the sun and the sunspots. And we've had episodes and cycles of global warming, according to Mr. Avery, dozens of times down through the centuries. And ordinarily there's a cycle that lasts about 1,500 years, and much of this has been determined scientifically by ice core. And they've gone down to Antarctica and they found ice cores that traces back many, many thousands of years. Yes, there is global warming, and when you go through this cycle, why you'll get maybe 2 degrees, or maybe at the most 3 degrees during this whole 1,500-year cycle, and then it will actually move back again. And actually, when the world is warmer, why, of course, you can grow grapes and crops in the northern hemisphere and the southern hemisphere, and of course it's much better as far as the crops are concerned. Well, right now let's go to Mr. Avery, because he knows a lot more about this subject than I do. Thank you so very much for being with us today. Mr. Avery, are you there?
Yes, I am.
All right, fine. Well, we've just been introducing you and your book, which you wrote along with Fred Singer, who we've actually interviewed before, on this concept of unstoppable global warming. Why is global warming unstoppable? I thought maybe if we signed the Kyoto Protocol and had these dramatic cutbacks, why we could stop this before global warming destroys civilization.
Well, we tend to forget that 70% of the warming we've had since 1850 occurred before 1940, and virtually all of the CO2 emitted by humans came after 1940. So the question is, what could have warmed the Earth between 1850 and 1940? And I am a history buff, and some years ago when people started talking about the idea that the Earth was going to have famine because of global warming, being an agriculturist.
Hold that thought, please, right? We're going to bring some stations on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Mr. Dennis Avery. Fortunately, he's with us. And so he was just saying that certainly most of the global warming had occurred before 1940, between the mid-1800s and 1940. And, of course, he had been going into the history of periods of global warming in the past. So you pick the story right up there.
Okay. During the medieval warming, which until recently was known to the history books as the little climate optimum, the populations of Europe and India and Asia all increased because of the good growing season. Long, warm summers, sunny skies, lots of rainfall, fewer, milder storms. So when global warming alarmists started talking about salmon due to global warming, I wrote an article for the Hudson Institute magazine, American Outlook, saying what's wrong with global warming. And I pointed out all of the good weather, all of the travel opportunities, the trade opportunities, fewer of the ships sank, the mountain passes weren't blocked by ice, and most of the famous castles and cathedrals in Europe, many of the famous beautifully carved temples in India and Cambodia date from the medieval warming, from the little climate optimum. So 3 years ago, the Hudson Institute asked me if the world needed another book on global warming, and I said, we need a book on the history and the physical evidence of the Earth's past warming. And really, the most important of these was the discovery in the Greenland Ice Core in 1983. This was 250,000 years of the Earth's temperature history recorded in the ice layers through oxygen isotopes. And we were amazed to see this little moderate 1,500-year cycle, 2 degrees up and 2 degrees down at the latitude of Washington and Paris, abrupt and linked to the sun. And we knew this because the two coldest periods in the Little Ice Age came when there were virtually no sunspots, a very weak period for the sun's activity.
And, of course, basically this probably explains why the ice caps are melting on Mars, you know. That's certainly not due to too much driving here on Earth, and yet both of the ice caps, polar and Arctic and Antarctic, on Mars are melting, and, of course, Greenland is no longer green.
There may actually be a linkage, because we have a new book coming out next month from a Danish space researcher named Henrik Svensmark, and he says the link is cosmic rays creating more or fewer low wet clouds in the Earth's atmosphere that tend to deflect the sun's heat back into outer space. There may be a similar kind of linkage on other planets.
I rather suspect there is. Well, anyway, of course, then why are they putting out all this information? Because, of course, if you study what's going on, and, of course, at the International Planet Committee on Climate Change, all these reports we're getting about, of course, the Arctic ice cap melting and the Antarctic ice cap melting and how much warmer the water is in the Arctic than it used to be, you know, and the snows of Kilimanjaro are melting. But there's an agenda behind all of this, isn't there?
You have to read very carefully. Now, a lot of the talk about the Antarctic melting was not about the Antarctic ice cap at all. It was about the Antarctic Peninsula, which is a little finger of the Antarctic that points up toward Argentina and is exposed to changes in sea temperatures on three sides, and never really had very much ice. But at the same time that the ice is melting on the Antarctic Peninsula, the 1% of the Antarctic continent that is most vulnerable to melting, it has gotten warm enough to snow more over the Arctic ice cap itself, and the latest readings from satellites say that the Antarctic is adding 45 billion tons of ice a year because it's snowing more and it's too cold to melt. Well, people don't realize this, but the reason that big blocks of ice fall off of Antarctica into the ocean is because they didn't melt on the way down. The Antarctic has rivers of ice blocks that slowly go to the sea based on freezing and gravity. And we're not sure if in modern times the Antarctic has ever melted, even during the very warm Holocene warming, the warming before the Roman warming, that may have been 5 degrees Celsius warmer than today.
Well, I mean, there's so much faulty information out there. We're told, you know, that, my goodness, you know, there are icebergs now in the ocean. Well, there have always been icebergs in the ocean. That's what sank the Titanic back in 1912. But suddenly, it's almost as if it's all because of the CO2, and we're just going to have to do something. Now, could you talk a little bit about what the real agenda is behind the Kyoto Protocol, behind this massive propaganda campaign to get us to go along with conservation, cutting back on energy usage here, and the search for alternative forms of energy?
Well, my favorite ploy in the global warming campaign is the polar bear. And they say that the Arctic ice will all disappear and the polar bears won't be able to catch any seals. Well, these are close cousins of the grizzly bear. I don't think we'd expect the grizzly bears to go extinct if they ran out of ice. And one of the things we do know is that seals bask, and they bask more when it's warm than when it's cold. And I guess if there's no ice, the seals would bask on a beach. And if I were a polar bear, I think I would figure out how to crouch in the bushes just off the beach and wait till the seal closed its eyes and then come romping rapidly down and grab it before that ungainly creature could get back into deep water.
I love these pictures they show you on television. It shows this polar bear, and he's on this little tiny chunk of ice, and he looks sort of forlorn, and you're sure that chunk of ice is going to melt, and then he's going to fall into the water and drown. These bears can swim 100 miles, you know.
They can swim 100 miles. I show my audiences a picture of a mother polar bear and her cubs on land eating a pair of seals that they presumably caught on land because there's no ice in the picture. It's summertime in the Arctic.
Sure. But because they're playing games with our minds. In fact, you have this wonderful quotation from somebody, I think it's named Christine Stewart, who's one of the leaders of this whole movement on global warming, who said, "No matter if the science of global warming is all phony, climate change provides the greatest opportunity to bring about justice and equality in the world." Let me repeat that, and then I'd like you to explain it. No matter if the science on global warming is all phony, climate change provides the greatest opportunity to bring about justice and equality in the world. What do you mean if this is all phony? I mean, obviously, this is one of the leaders of this whole movement to scare us to death about global warming. What's this about it being used for political purposes?
Well, the idea is that nobody should use any more energy than anybody else. If a country like the United States has figured out how to drill for oil 30,000 feet beneath the Gulf of Mexico and bring it up safely and cleanly and turn it into auto fuel, we shouldn't be allowed to use that auto fuel. If people in the South Sea Islands or Nigeria don't have oil, then we shouldn't have oil. And it's kind of an incredible attempt to dumb down human society and take it, if not back to the Stone Age, at least back to the 18th century.
But why would anybody want to do something like that? I mean, why would anybody want to destroy Western civilization and certainly the longevity it's produced, the health it's produced, the things it's produced? I mean, we have a wonderful standard of life now, but it's all dependent upon the availability of cheap and efficient energy.
Well, efficient energy, at any rate, which solar and wind power currently are not. And these are mature technologies. We aren't making big breakthroughs that are likely to make them tomorrow wonderfully efficient. I am particularly puzzled about why women respond positively to the idea of giving up energy, because it's the women in particular who have gained more than 30 years of life expectancy, and the first real diversity in lifestyle choices that women have had in all history. And they're proposing to give it all up on a theory that humans might be adding to a global warming that is natural and moderate and apparently slowing down. As I mentioned earlier, we had 0.5 of a degree Celsius warming before 1940. We've had a net 0.2 of a degree warming since 1940, over 65 years, with each added unit of CO2 having less impact on the climate. I can't construct a scary scenario out of that trend. I can't construct a scary scenario out of the very modest trend of increase in temperatures in the lower atmosphere that we're getting from our high-altitude balloon readings and our satellite readings up there. It's very hard for me to panic.
Well, it seems an awful lot of people are panicking. Al Gore is making a fortune scaring people to death. We'll be right back. Well, our guest, of course, is Mr. Dennis Avery. We're talking about his book, Unstoppable Global Warming. So, is there a specific agenda behind this whole effort to frighten our young people, to frighten the people of this country into going along with these ideas of conservation? What's the real agenda behind it?
I don't honestly know. I think there may be several agendas. I think there are a lot of people who legitimately look at the wealth of our society today, as I do, and say, golly, we've got some of us even more than we need. I could get by with a smaller car. I certainly could switch out these incandescent light bulbs and put in the new fluorescent mini bulbs. I could use fewer pairs of shoes in the course of a year. I could find somebody to repair that appliance, even though it would take time and effort on my part, instead of buying a new one. And there's truth in all of that, but none of that would make very significant differences in the amount of energy we consume. And when California experienced those rolling blackouts in 2000 and 2001, they made a drastic difference in California's livestock. At first, the power companies cut off the so-called interruptible customers, but pretty quickly, everybody was being brought into the rolling blackouts. Traffic lights were going out. Hospitals weren't able to keep their operating room lights going. The clean rooms in the computer industries that were the core of California's economic growth were having to shut down. Companies were talking about leaving California. People were talking about not being able to go skiing or go to the beach when they wanted. And this was just the beginning of a moderate reduction in the availability of electricity. It was not even a reduction overall, it was just a lack of expansion in electrical capacity. And yet the UN climate panel has told us that the first world needs to reduce its energy usage by 60 to 80%.
But of course
the United States, because we've used a lot of energy, the United States might be expected to cut back by 90%.
But, of course, this would destroy the whole industrial base of our society, would destroy the whole structure of our way of life.
We would be
reduced to a third world nation.
I live in Virginia. I would probably keep my furnace before anything else. But that means I'd have to ride a bike 10 miles into town to get groceries. And that's not really safe on our mountain roads. Really, really major changes in our lifestyle.
And I think there are really people who'd like to change our lifestyle, but they really don't want to change their lifestyle.
I certainly think that the information we've gotten recently on Al Gore's power consumption and his 20-room mansion is a starkly different message than Al Gore, the public figure, has offered in his movie and in his lectures. I think hypocrisy is the kindest word you can apply to that.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Dennis Avery. We're talking about this whole issue of global warming. It has nothing to do with global warming. It has to do with an attack, certainly on the lifestyle of the American people, lowering the living standards of the American people, as Gorbachev and Marie Strong and Stephen Rockefeller had said in the Earth Charter, equitable distribution of wealth within nations and between nations. That's my put in that. Mr. Avery didn't mention that, but certainly equitable, at least among you and I, but not among the elite. And of course, recently it's come out that Al Gore has a 10,000 square foot house. I don't know how many bedrooms he has in it. He says he needs that to get be able to get some sort of a global or energy credit for energy use. That's how he justifies he has a 10,000 square foot house. He has to get the energy credits, and here in California, where of course our governor Schwarzenegger is so concerned about the use of energy and conservation, we find out he has a Hummer, a great gas guzzler. But it seems like there's a different standard for the elite and for us common folks. Have you ever had that impression?
Well, yes, obviously. But I'd like to come back to this fact that we really haven't had very much warming. We're talking less than 1 degree Celsius over 175 years. And I recently ran across a study done by the U.S. Forest Service of a group of long dead trees on White Wing Mountain in California, up near Lake Tahoe. And these trees were all killed in the year 1350 by a localized volcanic explosion. Hot gases came out of a vent and just killed this whole grove of trees, which were above the current tree line, seven different species, and the Forest Service says for those trees to be growing where they were in 1350 at the end of the medieval warming, the temperature there must have been 3.2 degrees warmer than today. Now, we've supposedly experienced unprecedented warming in this country, in this world recently, and yet these trees tell us the temperature 600 odd years ago was 3.2 degrees Celsius warmer than today.
Well, of course, now we're told that certainly all scientists have agreed. I mean, certainly no legitimate scientist disagrees with the fact that global warming is a real issue. How do you respond to that?
I say that my book has more than 100 peer-reviewed studies of researchers who have found physical evidence of the 1500-year climate cycle. 300 authors have attached their names to this 100-plus study. If I went through the whole roster of scientific studies, probably I could have 500 or 600 researchers' names whose own work testifies to this moderate cycle that preceded human emissions of CO2. I don't know whether they'd say, yes, I believe in man-made warming or not. I doubt very many of them would subscribe to the alarmist predictions of the UN of 6 degrees Celsius by 2100 or 11 degrees Celsius by 2200, because you just can't construct that kind of scare trend out of the net warming since 1940.
Well, certainly, I think that the scientists agree we're having global warming, but it's minimal. And the other thing is, the question is not do we have global warming, but You know, does man's activity, the CO2 and the CO2 produced by mechanization and energy production, actually increase the global warming, or is this a normal phenomenon? Would that be a fair appraisal of what we're up against?
Well, there's an even more important question. Is it going to be significantly dangerous?
All right.
I think the answer to that is we have no credible evidence that it would be.
And, of course, if we were to sign the Kyoto Protocol, do we have any guarantee it would stop global warming?
Well, the Kyoto Protocol at the moment requires only a 5.2% reduction from 1990 levels, and that wouldn't make even a measurable difference in any impact CO2 might have on the climate. And I think it's also very significant that none of the Kyoto member countries has actually reduced its greenhouse gas emissions since it signed the Kyoto Protocol.
And, of course, it doesn't involve the greatest polluter in the world today, which is China. It's already targeted the United States. Are we stupid enough to go along with it? Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Mr. Dennis Avery. His book is Unstoppable Global Warming, and subtitled Every 1500 Years. Now, the book is written with S. Fred Singer. Dr. Singer is certainly a world-known climatologist. We've interviewed Dr. Singer in the past, and now we have Mr. Avery, who, of course, co-wrote the book with Mr. Singer, and trying to point out that this is a phenomenon that is related to the sun and the solar winds and this sort of thing. Would you like to sort of develop that idea? Because I think it's so vitally important to understand, or people to understand, that it really has to do with the sun and the sun's activities.
Yeah, I mentioned that when we first discovered the 1500-year cycle in the Greenland ice core, the first two researchers to look at the ice core pattern said, it looks to us as though this 1500-year cycle is linked to the sun. And they said that they found that linkage exhibited in the sunspot cycles and sunspot numbers. They also found it in the carbon-14 isotopes in the tree rings and in the beryllium-10 isotopes in the ice cores. And we have a new book coming out probably in March, written by Henrik Svensmark of the Danish Space Agency. Svensmark has created clouds in the laboratory by mimicking the sun's ultraviolet light with an electric lamp trained on a reaction chamber filled with the Earth's atmospheric gas. And what happens is that when he turns on that UV light, immediately he started getting billions of microscopic little droplets of water and sulfuric acid that were ionized. They carried an electric charge, and they become the seeds for the low wet clouds that shield the Earth from more heat from the sun. Variations in the sun's activity create a variation in the number of cosmic rays that hit the Earth from outer space, and that variation in cosmic rays amplifies the variability of the sun into a significant variation in climate on the Earth through the low wet clouds.
All right, just sort of hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment with Mr. Dennis Avery. And once again, the book is Unstoppable Global Warming. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Once again, our guest is Mr. Dennis Avery. Mr. Avery, do you have a website or any information you'd like to get out? We're actually going to carry your book. In fact, I talked to your publisher this morning. They tell me the book won't be out for another week or so, but they will have the copies. We've ordered them, so we will have them available as soon as anybody does. But certainly, are you with the Hudson Institute? Do you have a website
yes.
or information you'd like to get out so our listeners would know how to get your information and other information from the Hudson Institute?
Well, I'd like to brag a little bit first.
You go right ahead.
we hit the New York Times paperback bestseller list at number 25, and for a book of this nature to hit the New York Times bestseller list at all is pretty astounding. And I think it's a credit to the talk radio phenomenon and the internet phenomenon, because we have been unable to get we've been able to talk to one newspaper in this country about the 1500 year cycle, talk to them directly, and that particular paper hasn't published anything on the 1500 year cycle. So to the extent that people know about this book, it's in spite of the newspapers of the nation, and I think primarily due to radio hosts like yourself. Now, our website is Hudson, H-U-D-S-O-N, .org. That's the website of the Hudson Institute. I'm a senior fellow there, and a member of the Hudson Board of Directors put up the money to write and publish this book. It was not sponsored by Exxon or a coal company, and the 100 studies that are cited in it, none of them was paid for by Exxon or a coal company. This is straight, peer-reviewed academic information from some of the top research institutions in the world, like the Scripps Howard Oceanographic Institute, Sweden's Uppsala University, the University of Bern in Switzerland, James Madison University near me in Virginia. All of it totally unbiased by energy money, although frankly I think if Exxon sponsored good climate research and it could stand up to peer review, then it ought to be on the roster of our data banks, whether it's from Exxon or who it's from.
Well, I think the important thing is that this has to be based upon solid science. And my concern is, of course, that they're simply lying to us. They're telling us that that we're having more hurricanes and more tornadoes than ever before. And, and whenever there's a hurricane, they always just sort of focus our attention on it, and they shake their heads and say, global warming. What's the truth? Are we really having a lot more hurricanes and tornadoes than ever before?
No, absolutely not. And the theory is that storms get their power from the temperature differential between the equator and the pole. Well, during a global warming, the temperature of the equator increases almost not at all, while the temperature in the Arctic might increase by 4 or 5 degrees Celsius. So there should be fewer, milder storms. Now, on hurricanes, we've got some very good historical data that, again, almost nobody mentions. During the latter part, from 1700 to 1850, during the latter part of the Little Ice Age, the British Navy was basing wooden sailing ships in the Caribbean. So they paid close attention to the weather, and they kept excellent records, which are still available. And when you study those hurricane records from 1700 to 1850, you find that there were almost one-third, there were almost three times as many major landfalling hurricanes per decade as during the last 50 years, when supposedly we have unprecedented global warming.
But of course,
the hurricane history goes along with the hurricane theory that a global warming means fewer, milder storms and not more and fiercer storms.
Well, of course, we're just not getting that from the news media. In other words, certainly if you read the New York Times and the Washington Post, and which I read on a regular basis, why you'd be scared to death, and you'd know that we were having worse hurricanes and worse tornadoes. It's only a matter of time before one of them hits you out there, and you're going to regret that you weren't concerned about, of course, global warming. Now, what about this idea that the sea level is going to rise? We've seen the pictures there of New York City, and all that's left sticking out the top of New York is the Empire State Building, because everything else is underwater because of the rising coastlines.
Well, in order for the sea levels to rise, a lot of ice would have to melt. A lot of ice that's not floating in the Arctic Ocean. And we mentioned earlier in the program that both Greenland and the Antarctic are adding ice. We've mentioned that both of those places are too cold for the ice to actually melt. I've seen a study that indicates that it would take, at current temperatures, another 7,000 years to melt the ice in the Antarctic ice cap. And if you increase the temperatures by 5 degrees Celsius, that would add only 1.5% to the melt rate. It is impossible for a huge block of ice like the Antarctic ice cap to melt quickly. It's too cold there. The ice reflects heat. It doesn't accept the heat. This simply can't happen rapidly. Now, ice can melt rapidly in a big ice sheet that can be hit readily by the sun, and this happened 12,000 years ago at the end of the last ice age, and a 40,000 trillion tons of additional ice had been frozen into ice sheets in Canada and Siberia and the Northern Hemisphere, and the climate shifted from an ice age into a warm interglacial, lots more sun, lots of water collected where the Great Lakes now are behind an ice dam, and when the ice dam broke, that water rushed out, carved the Mohawk Valley in New York State, and overwhelmed the ocean conveyor current. And that was very disruptive. But we don't have that ice anymore. That ice all melted 10 or 12,000 years ago. All we've got left now that could cause any trouble are the Greenland ice sheet and the Antarctic ice cap, and neither one is melting now, and neither one can melt rapidly.
But, of course, what they're doing is creating this element of fear. Do you have a feeling that that the people really are just trying to frighten us into going along with this agenda, which would really have a profound impact on our way of life and would, of course, really disrupt the energy utilization across America?
I hate to sound like a Pollyanna, but I don't think we'll go along with it. Even California didn't go along with it when push came to shove. When the rolling blackout reality became clear to them, they've backslid since then, but they went ahead and authorized additional power plants. The countries of Europe have been just chomping at the bit for America to sign the Kyoto Protocol and join them in adding $5 a gallon worth of taxes to our auto fuel. But when the European Kyoto members have been faced with actually cutting emissions, they haven't done it. Germany now says it can't cut 5% from its 1990 levels to meet the 2010 Kyoto deadline. Maybe it's 2012. It can only cut 0.5%. That would almost be rational if they hadn't promised in the meantime to eliminate their nuclear power facilities, which are the only power plants they have not fueled by fossil fuel. So they're still not being totally realistic, but they have not cut their greenhouse emissions, and they are reneging on their promise to do so.
Well, because one of the things is Certainly the most efficient means of cutting back on CO2 would be to stop burning fossil fuels and create our energy by nuclear, but certainly we have been told over and over and over again by the media that we don't know what to do with the spent fuel. After all, we've got all this spent fuel sitting around in rusting containers for 50 years, and we can't bury it there in Nevada because we don't know what will happen 200 million years from now. Some of the spent fuel might get out into the water supply. Even though we spent billions of dollars building this big tunnel there, how do you address the people who will say, well, but we can't have nuclear fuel. We might have another Chernobyl. Or we can't have nuclear fuel because we don't know what to do with the spent nuclear fuel. What do you say to those people?
I think it's instructive that environmental groups are suing to stop the construction of two geothermal power plants at Medicine Lake in Northern California. These power plants would have no emissions at all. They're conveniently located to send their power to the cities on the Bonneville power grid without cutting down a lot of trees for new transmission lines. They would be completely out of sight, except for a few hikers occasionally. Each of the two plants would occupy 9 acres. And the courts have held up the construction of these geothermal emissionless power plants because some green groups say it would uglify 18 acres of lovely wilderness.
I mean, all of these things that they say are just so ridiculous that
people are not serious.
Well,
when they claim to believe that global warming is the most serious crisis to face the modern world, they don't really believe it, or they would be encouraging the construction of these geothermal plants, and they might even be talking a lot more constructively about ways to deal with nuclear waste and to follow the French example of getting 75% of their electric power from nuclear plants.
And of course, for our listeners out there, what you do with the spent nuclear fuel is you reprocess it. It can be readily reprocessed. Everybody else in the world does it. But the media in America will never tell the American people that. As far as Chernobyl was a plant that was built without a containment center. It had a tar and paper roof, and of course, when they got a gigantic steam explosion, why the radioactive graphite spread over the area. But this could never happen in America because we have containment vessels, and four more people died in the backseat of Ted Kennedy's car at Chappaquiddick than ever died at Three Mile Island. But it was a media event, and would you agree with that?
I have to agree with that. Those are the facts.
Right, but you don't have to. You can disagree with me.
I'm not entitled to my own facts. I'm entitled to my own opinion, but facts are facts.
And that is the thing. You know, it is so incredible. You know, you just wonder, are people really this foolish that they really believe that Al Gore, who with a 10,000-square-foot house, justifies what he's doing, say, well, I need energy credits to counter my energy emissions? I don't even know what he's talking about.
Well, that doesn't even get into his use of jet planes to go and accept the environmental awards.
Amen to that. Well, Sidney, how are we going to reach the American people? I mean, you've done a wonderful job with your book here, giving all the scientific documentation, and the fact that the scientific studies are out there, and scientists do not agree on this, at least legitimate scientists, and most of those who've signed these various petitions, the few hundred of them, all already are working for government. And, of course, my friends in science will tell me that these people always apologize, saying, look, the only reason I signed is I'm afraid for my job.
I minored in journalism in college. I'm now ashamed of that minor. I worked on a small newspaper in Michigan in my early years. My editor from the Ingham County News would roast most of today's journalistic practitioners over a slow fire. The saving grace, and I've sort of alluded to this earlier, is that we are no longer locked into a journalism monopoly run by the, what I call the Columbia University Journalism Alumni Association. We have a diversity of news sources today like we've never had in the world before, and the malpractice on global warming information, I think, is going to drive even more of the public to make even greater use of talk radio and the internet as sources for their information, and hasten the already abject decline of newspapers and major TV networks.
Oh, I certainly agree with you, and I really feel privileged to be part of this this alternative source of information. Well, of course, certainly there is so much information you cite in your book about the evidence, the scientific evidence of these past cycles, you know, down to the eons of this 1,500-year cycle. And certainly this is well documented and accepted by scientists throughout the world, and it's
there
amazing.
There truly is a consensus in the world about the existence of the 1,500-year climate cycle.
And
that's based on physical evidence.
And, of course, you document that here so well in your book. And the trouble is, the average individual out there, I'm sure most of our listeners, have never heard of the 1,500-year cycle of warming, cooling, warming, cooling. And the fact that they haven't heard of it is simply a reflection of the degree of control that exists today over what the average American thinks. And that's why we need alternative medicine, we need books like this. And the book is called Unstoppable Global Warming. It's available for Radio Liberty by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Fascinating book, available, and of course we'll be back in just a moment to wrap up today's program. Our guest today, Mr. Dennis Avery, the book Unstoppable Global Warming, and subtitled Every 1500 Years, because that's how it works. And the sun goes through cycles of sunspots, and of course there's solar winds and solar storms, and this is not the first time. And all I ask is, people tell me about global warming, I say, well, why do they call Greenland Greenland? Well, Mr. Avery, we've got about 3 minutes before I have to let you go. How would you like to wrap up the program? What are your thoughts? What message would you like to leave with our listeners?
Well, I guess I'd say that the knowledge of the 1,500-year climate cycle is relatively new. If it takes 25 years to introduce a new idea into mainstream thinking, that's about how far back we first discovered the cycle in the Greenland ice cores. In the last 10 or 12 years, we've had a major proliferation of...
We lost Mr. Avery, and I'm going to get our producer, see if we can get him back on the line there. So I'll ask to try to get Mr. Avery back. I didn't mean to get him cut off there. But I think it's so vitally important that people understand that these scientists have actually drilled down into the ice, not only in Greenland, but certainly in the Antarctic, and have gotten these ice cores out. I heard a story about Greenland, and of course we hear about all this global warming. Well, apparently there was a plane that went down to Greenland during the Second World War, and of course it landed there. And it actually was now buried under about 40 feet of ice, and somehow or other they were able to identify it and get the plane out. Well, if everything is warming and we're having this global warming, why would a World War II plane be under 40 foot of ice? Well, because it's getting colder in Greenland in many respects. I mean, the ice generates more and more cold. Yes, we are having a little bit of global warming. And we've had probably a little over a degree of global warming over the last 100 or more years, and only 0.4 of a degree during the first 40 years of the 20th century. And then it actually began cooling again at that time, And that's why, of course, if you go back to 1950 and 1960, you'll see all of those articles about the danger of global cooling and the new ice age. But when they hit upon the idea of global warming, it had nothing to do with science. It had to do with lowering the living standards of the average American. And that's what this is really all about. Once you understand that, so much of what's going on today really does make sense. There are people who have a different worldview. There are people who hate America, who hate our affluence, except that Al Gore wants his 10,000 square foot house, and Arnold Schwarzenegger wants his Hummer. They just don't want us to have things like that. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course we lost Mr. Avery there. But this is the time when I need to remind all of our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we do hope that some of you will agree with us that you're going to get information on Radio Liberty you're not going to get elsewhere. What is global warming all about? It's an attack on the affluence of our society. They want to get you to do away with your light bulbs, your incandescent light bulbs, and put in fluorescent light bulbs. Why? To convince you global warming is real, for the same reason when you go to the airport, why you have to go through that long line. They know that there's no terrorist threat. If there were, they would have sealed our southern borders. If there were really a terrorist threat, we would have had all sorts of terrorist attacks on America over the last five or more years since 9/11. But there haven't been. There haven't been because the terrorist threat is basically created. If you doubt what I'm saying, why, you get the September 2006 issue of Foreign Affairs magazine, written for the elite. The lead article is, why haven't they hit us again? And the answer is, the reason Al-Qaeda hasn't attacked America since September 11, 2001 is because there are almost no members of Al-Qaeda in the world. I mean, you're talking about a few thousand out of 6 billion people. And the same way, as far as global warming is concerned, it's a scam. It's a very cleverly devised scam because they have the media behind them. And if there was ever a demonstration of how thoroughly the print media is controlled, it's that. And, of course, television, it goes right along with that. But we do have radio, we have shortwave, we have satellite, and we have the Internet. And at least some people are learning the truth. Now, we do have a great 4 tapes out on global warming. And, of course, we have my sustainable development 4-tape set and video, and we have our syllabus that goes into the overall plan to lower the living standards of the American people, to impoverish our people. And of course there you'll get a copy of the Earth Charter. You need to read it through. What they really want to do is impoverish you, and of course to destroy the affluence of our society, because why should we be so rich when there's so many people so poor? Now, this doesn't apply to Al Gore and his 10,000 square foot house, or to Arnold and his great wealth and his Hummer and his expensive cars and planes. It's just for you and me, we common folks. Well, we hope many of you will want to get the book Unstoppable Global Warming. We hope many of you will want to get our 4-tape set on global warming. And of course, that you'll certainly want to get my talk on sustainable development. We have it on video. We have a 4-tape set my talk is on sustainable development, which is part of that. We have a 4-tape set on sustainable development. We have a syllabus on sustainable development. And it's all part of one explanation of what's going on. We also have a 4-tape set, a syllabus, and a video on electricity. How did they get us to go along with the regulation of electricity? Why, they told us it was going to cut the cost of electricity. Oh, wouldn't it be wonderful? We bring in competition into the electric market. We're going to cut the cost of electricity. And what happened? Why, your electricity bills went up. It was always intended that way. But if they told you the truth, would you have supported deregulation of electricity? You need to get my video, 4-tape set, and syllabus on electricity. And I actually had the opportunity of talking to some of the key people in the electricity market here, some of the key regulators, and they told me that electricity was just so cheap to produce, so they had to find a means of raising the prices. And they've done the same thing with natural gas and with the oil. Why? Because they have all sorts of regulations to keep from drilling for natural gas. and developing oil here in the United States and Alaska. And, oh my goodness, we can't do anything drilling up in Anwar. It's a pristine wilderness. Have you ever seen Alaska up above Anchorage? There's nothing there at all but tundra. It's all a lie, but a lie told often enough will be believed. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, RadioLiberty.com. America, our way of life, our future are under attack today. Pray for America. Pray for revival. And please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection until tomorrow. May the Lord be with you.
You're listening to the Global Star Radio Network, located at Telstar 5 KU band, frequency 11836, symbol rate 20770. Thank you for listening.
Yeah, and he also got
the
information.
Oh, radio yeah. Network,
I guess
John
you know
Wilson.
That story pretty well.
Yeah. Johnson,
I think we all do.
Large
well, I hope we all do.
French yeah,
at least the
would you believe that a friend of mine, he was in a jewelry store with his wife, and he heard another young girl say, look at that one, it's got a little man on the cross. They were looking at cross necklaces. She didn't know who that little man was on the cross.
No.
Isn't that sad?
Attorneys
yeah.
for two men
we
who
need
been
to
held
tell
nearly
people
5
about
years
Jesus.
At Guantanamo Bay
yeah.
would like
God
the Supreme
Hadassah.
Court to rule
God
on
God
their
God.
Cases before the justices
Bye.
Leave on summer break. Last year, the High Court threw out Bush administration plans to try one of them before a military commission. The new law, the Military Commissions Act, has restored the plan and has stripped detainees of their right to file a challenge in court.